Hi, I'm Colleen Brennan.
And I'm Janice Rodriguez.
And this is Defending Indiana. We're learning all about architecture and design in the state of Indiana today with our special guest, Professor Emeritus of Architecture from Ball State University, Tony Costello. Janice, did you know that there is a place in Indiana that's considered an architectural mecca internationally?
Not until you told me that we're doing this episode. And I am very ashamed. I am embarrassed and I'm ashamed, and I will be wearing my shame publicly here on our podcast today.
This is not a hair shirt is not necessary.
No, I was thinking more public self-flagellation outside.
No. Okay. No flogging, nothing. you're okay. There's no shame in not knowing what you don't know. Okay. But the American Institute of Architects considers Columbus, Indiana to be the sixth most architecturally important city in the U.S., behind New York, Chicago, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and Columbus, Indiana, a town of like 50,000 people. That's like, that to me is kind of unbelievable.
No, it's completely unbelievable. But it's not. That sounded bad.
It's real.
You're like, actually, I've just told you the thing. No, I guess, but I'm just wondering why it seems so like niche almost that like I wouldn't have heard of it. Or is it like the ego of like the big cities who are like, oh, we are the best. Why am I French again? Sorry.
We are the best.
Talk about American architect specifically, but world renowned because you're bringing in these like amazing internationally renowned architects.
World renowned.
God, I mean, it's amazing.
I know. So let's back up a little bit here. So like, you know, as a kid growing up in Indiana, Janice, surrounded by steel mill, did you have any concept of like architecture and design? I mean, like, was there anything that like in Indiana that stuck out for you?
The roller coaster at Indiana Beach? What? I don't know. No, I mean, again, our proximity to Chicago made us like appreciate that. I feel like I had an appreciation for obviously skyscrapers and how things looked all together, different kinds of buildings, and then learning about, you know, different kinds of architecture in school, but also very old, you know, Baroque versus Greco-Roman and things like that. But, you know, we're talking here like about mid-century, and that comes later just in my personal like kind of preferences of things. But, you know, they're not trying to teach you as a 10-year-old, you know, the importance of mid-century architecture. Yeah. But, yeah, what about you?
You know, for me, in terms of like architecture, I think it all started with Mike Brady sitting at his desk in the Brady Bunch.
In a mid-century desk. That was very...
In a very cool house, by the way.
I'm sorry. I believe that's mid-century, I think.
In a house where I always wondered where Alice's room was. Like, where was Alice's room? Did she just live in the kitchen?
I think it was off the kitchen. Like, we know where the oven was. I feel like, she
was there like a doorway that way? It seems unfair that she was 24/7 in her blue dress and white apron catering to an architect and his six children and wife. I don't know. But anyway.
Yeah, I feel like, and then when you see her out of the uniform, it was so, only if she went bowling with, was her name Stan? What was her boyfriend's name?
Oh, Stan the Butcher?
Was it Stan the Butcher?
Was he a butcher or a baker? Oh my, butcher. Now I'm like, I'm embarrassed about my brain.
I think he was a butcher. This? Hold on. Stan, is it was Stan? Am I also like...
Or was it Arnold? Or am I mixing up Happy Days?
Yeah, totally. Hold on. Brady Bunch. Also, I'm thinking like, was it Stan?
I feel like it was Stan the Butcher.
No, it was Sam.
Sam.
Thank you. See, I was close.
Yep. Sam,
he was the owner of the local butcher shop and boyfriend of the Brady's. Yeah.
Okay. Boyfriend of Alice.
Yep. Of the Brady's. Sorry, cut off. Yes.
I don't ever recall her entering or leaving the home. Like, I know she probably did.
They went bowling a couple times.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. So Mike Brady, the architect, I just thought it was super cool that, like,
this is your foray into the...
Well, and I had a friend growing up. I had a good friend growing up, Annette, whose father was an architect, and they had the most amazing house that sat on the top of a dune.
Wow.
And it was and you had to drive up this really steep, winding driveway to get it was just amazing. And I was like, what? How do I become one of these people?
Right.
And for a while, there were two occupations that I wanted when I was a kid. I wanted to be a nun. Okay, we'll dive into that.
That's it. The record just scratched and skipped. Okay.
Exactly. A nun. We'll come back. I was young. I was Catholic. It was a thing.
It was a thing.
And it was, I knew nothing about
Listen,
it.
Listen, I'm sorry. I was young and Catholic and I never
I don't know. It was, I think it was the drama. I think it was the drama.
It was a lot. Yeah.
There, I mean, it's just, there was, you know, we got outfits, to sing.
Yeah. Simplification of wardrobe choices.
I really liked the idea that at some point there was a chance, there was an opportunity for beatification. And like, that is fame, right?
Yeah.
Saintliness. Okay. Right. I mean, that's sort of the ultimate. So anyway, we don't have to break down.
Okay,
my psychology.
Cool. This will be a future episode. We talk about your saintly goals.
Yeah. Nobody wants to know more about that, but let's just say it was a very disturbed time.
Speak for yourself. Everybody wants to know more. P.S. I'm taking notes. We're circling back at some point.
And an architect. I wanted to, like, I remember for probably about 6 or 7 years when I was young, because of Mike Brady and my friend Annette's father, I was like, that looks like one of the coolest jobs anybody could ever have.
Architect.
Yeah. And for design, you know, in architecture, we looked out over Lake Michigan. You could see the skyline of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Unobstructed, you know, unless there were clouds or anything like that. But you could see it, you know, really well on really beautiful, bright, sunny days. You could see the Hancock and the Sears Tower and the Standard Oil Building back then. Now it's the Aon Center.
Right.
But we had in my town growing up, John Lloyd Wright, who is Frank Lloyd Wright's son. So John Lloyd Wright developed Lincoln Logs, like that was his invention. Yeah.
How do we not know that? What was, God,
I don't know, Janice.
I am slipping on the Indiana folklore history.
He invented Lincoln Logs, and then he designed the grade school in my hometown.
Okay.
And then several homes around us were John Lloyd Wright homes. So anyway, we were always kind of surrounded by design, but I didn't really know much more than that. Mike Brady, my friend Annette. And her dad.
These are the frameworks, the little, you know, the nuggets of your life that have all come together.
Exactly.
I don't know how I did not know that about the Lincoln Log. I feel like I did, but thank you for reminding me.
Yeah. So John Lloyd Wright, Lincoln Logs.
Yeah.
Childhood staple.
I feel a little bit more connected to like Frank Lloyd Wright because I'm just so close to Oak Park.
Yeah.
And then obviously he had his school and everything up north, like in Lake Villa, like Zurich, like. Because they just closed it.
Yeah.
So there's like, so I was just, you know, kind of reading about that. Unfortunately, it was like, yeah, they closed it. And like, I think it went to Lake Forest College. Because that has something to do with the Bears. Like, I mean, of course, this is my interest is the sports. I like when men just bash each other's heads in for my enjoyment. But yeah, so they closed that. But anyway, Lincoln Log. See how everything's coming together?
Yeah.
I feel like I should put something on the wall and like just start doing the yarn.
Yeah, yeah. Connect. The line map. Absolutely. Right.
My husband's like, you haven't eaten yet. I'm like, it's cool. I've almost figured it out. We're all connected. But yeah, so yeah, I mean, just growing up, right. And then obviously like there's a Frank Lloyd Wright home, if I'm not mistaken, in the dunes, right? Like by you, like where you grew up, Michigan City. Yeah,
so
Long Beach,
there's just a lot of Lloyd Wrights.
There we go. Okay. Over.
There's a, and
it might
and
not, be, it might not be Frankie, but a descendant could be
there's
Johnny.
There's a lot up in Wisconsin, and that's where Frank Lloyd Wright's like home. I read a whole, Loving Frank was the name of the book.
Uh-huh.
And it was about the woman.
Okay.
It's
I was like, it's kind of like, yeah.
It's a dark story. I'm not going to get into that because we're talking about Indiana. But I do have to say, if you want to read a really good book.
I like it. Okay.
Loving Frank is a very good book. And I knew nothing about this story until I read the book. Fascinating.
So there's an interesting like Midwest, like Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, like very important to like American architecture and even international architecture. So that's, didn't know. I just kept thinking, okay, Chicago, Detroit.
Right.
The truth is there's like that school he had mentioned. I think it was Weiss had the school up in Michigan. If just remember that Frank Lloyd Wright had a whole school. Is it the Prairie School? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was up in the north suburbs. And they just moved to, that's what it was. And they just moved to Arizona or something. And it was very controversial because they thought that it was against his initial like charter and like the money that was left and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, look that up if you're interested. It's very dramatic. But anyway, so who knew? I mean, I guess we should have known growing up here, but I mean, that's great. I think a lot of people, again, think big cities, think the coast.
Yeah.
And there's actually quite a rich architectural history in the Midwest and particularly in Indiana. And I'm here for in the Great Lakes region. So that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And design and not just architecture, but interior, you know, with, you know, Columbus, Indiana, and we're going to have just the most wonderful guest come and speak in a few minutes, and teach us a lot more about it. But, you know, Saarinen Furniture and Miller Furniture and these beautiful buildings and places, excuse me, were furnished beautifully as well. And it's just, it's something that people don't really know. Maybe who don't have a specific interest in design or architecture. So I feel like, Janice, as we're defending our home state, we could, this is a good defense. This is like one that's easy.
Right. Dunk. What can you say? I mean, I was going to say something and then I was like, no, we're not going there.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be the after show. Because I know there's some controversy about Wright's designs and holding up and there's controversy about everything.
There's lots, but
for another time, but yeah, no, that's amazing. I think this is something, I mean, as far as like schools visiting, maybe they do, but maybe they think you got to start young though. I think you don't have that appreciation for these buildings. I think you're not exposed to some of the stuff until much later. I would have loved as a kid to go to Columbus.
Yeah.
I feel very late. I feel a little cheated. I'm going to be honest with you. I feel a little very late to the game. And for somebody who's like, you know, been to Europe a few times and like specifically have sought out like art and like have made special trips to see some random exhibit of Salvador Dali's drawings in the bottom of a church and the outskirts of Barcelona. Like, I'm mad that I don't know about this.
But all along.
Yeah. And it's been here and like, and I will. Yeah. Cause I love that century of art. I like postmodernism. I mean, I know Dali's out there, but I do like from like Picasso, like a little bit past Matisse and like, this is when all this was happening. So
All
right. I'm going back to school. Somebody school me.
Going back. No. And I also think it's fascinating that, you know, you and I grew up on the north part of the state. I don't think they call 30, it a side.
Is that what we call it?
Right. The northern part of the state. I knew nothing. Everything I learned was about Chicago.
Okay.
Pretty much everything.
Yeah, you know, with art. True.
Yeah. I mean, we had an earlier episode on culture and stuff, and we definitely had culture, you know, where I grew up, as I'm sure they did all over the state of Indiana.
Yeah.
As we're learning more and more. But we just didn't, where we were, we didn't learn about it.
Right.
I didn't learn what else was in Indiana.
I think it was like, this goes back to something we talked about like in the previous season. It was very much like, just go to Chicago.
Yeah.
It's quicker for us.
Yeah.
Get all the kids in the bus and you have the Art Institute, you have Science and Industry Field. I mean, you just have it all there.
Yeah.
Aquarium. So they're like, I remember that we had to go to Indianapolis, like third grade, you have to go to do,
we were
the civic stuff.
Yeah.
It was definitely third grade and that was it. We never went anywhere else in Indiana.
We were pages at the state,
right? The Capitol.
Oh, yeah.
Fancy.
When I mean pages, I mean, I think there were 30 of us and we mm-hmm. were small. I want to say sixth grade was when we went. I think that was the first time I went to Indianapolis too.
It wasn't a page. They just put us on a bus and they're like, take a picture. This is Indiana. This is where the big decisions are made.
Yeah.
It's a seat of power right here. This is what I make fun of my beautiful homestead. Well, I'm interested because I just put up mid-century modern because I realized I just made that reference to Matisse and he's like right before. But yeah, all the people we were talking about and that we studied and we're so excited to talk to, it was Eames.
Yes.
Charles and Ray Eames were influenced and were like the understudies or somebody else that has a building, a very famous architect. And then like Noel and all that, they went to Michigan. And this is like where like mid-century modern furniture comes from. I mean, that's just amazing.
Amazing.
But all ties to Indiana, man. Indiana's the central.
It is.
The corn of Indiana pulls everything together. Really? Because Columbus, Indiana is very rural, right? At the time.
They're coming there
in the 50s. Like they're coming there in the 50s and 60s.
Right.
I mean, it was Cummins and then it was corn. Cummins and corn.
Cummins and corn.
It's just interesting. Like it's wild.
It would have been like any of the smaller towns 50 or 60 miles away from Chicago, right? Because you had Indianapolis that was, I mean, you could do an easy day trip, right? You know, an hour and a half to get to Indy from there,
or, right?
You know, straight up 65. But they made Columbus a place where people from Indy would want to go experience, you know, art, architecture. So
it's something I'd like to come back to eventually. Is like, because I've heard this about artists too. Obviously, just that change of, you always assume, again, art, big city, galleries, you know, architecture, big buildings, big cities, you know, but it would make sense, architects or artists, right? You're drawing, you're envisioning that you would need like a change of scenery.
Yeah.
And I'm just interested, like, I don't know if these guys have journals or anything. This is me. I want to get real deep with this, but like, but like, I wonder if they were like, okay, I'm just looking out this corn and I'm going to like come up with this crazy thing. And it's not even that crazy, but it was crazy for that time and that space.
Right.
And the fact that they were like, cool. Like, well, you know, this guy is going to go on to do the pyramid at the Louvre is making like our library. Like this is wild.
Yeah. Crazy. But everybody has to look for inspiration from somewhere. And I would assume the challenge I mean, we all want to be inspired. Well, look to the corn.
Look to the corn. Look to the corn. This is me. I have like writer's block. Look to the corn.
Eyes on the corn.
The corn is your friend. Breathe the corn.
Breathe the corn. Look at the stalks, the kernels.
Do you hear that tractor? Husks. Do you hear that tractor in the distance?
That's a combine harvesting.
Oh my gosh. Let's run corn meditations. Listen, this is a business here. We are defending Indiana's new side business is corn for creativity. That's it. I'm buying the domain tomorrow.
Defending Indiana's side hustle. The sounds of corn.
The gods of corn. Yeah, there's an album. There's an app, right? Where we just, do you think I'm joking? This is what we do. We just sit here and we create. We just envisioned the corn and new ideas. Minds have been open, Colleen.
Inspiration, practically divine.
What is wrong with us? So many things.
We have tapped it. I didn't know. I'm literally right now drawing an ear of corn. My note.
See? You're inspired.
It looks oddly like a microphone. Okay. So
it's you in the corn again.
Yeah.
Photo shoot. That's for another time, guys. We're not going to freak out everybody, but no, this is great. And, I'm seriously, I'm going sooner than later, like in August.
Yeah.
Everybody should go.
I agree.
And when we were talking about places to visit that was last season already, right?
We've done, Janice, we've learned
so much.
So much.
This Columbus was not on, I think it kind of was a side list because we were like, we knew we were going to do an episode about this.
Yeah.
But please add this. In addition to the Sybaris in Indianapolis.
Right.
We did, in case that part got edited out. If you're going to go to Indianapolis, then make a quick, uh, quick, that's west, going down, south, that's east, south and east to Columbus. And you can brag to all your friends because I'm telling you, we're sleeping on this.
Just throw out a couple of architect names and you're going to just right. pepper your conversation with those names and you will instantly sound brilliant.
Exactly. Saarinen's, just all of them. The right. Yes,
yes. I am pay. All right.
Peace. There was all kinds. I wrote all these down. Listen, impress your friends.
So Janice, I think this is a really good time to introduce our guest today. Our guest is a native New Yorker who's now been in Indiana for 54 years. He is an Irving Distinguished Professor Emeritus of Architecture at Ball State University. He has his own architecture firm, C&A Costello & Associates, a one-man architecture and urban design firm that he founded in Muncie, Indiana in 1976, and he was also elevated to fellowship in the American Institute of Architects. Please welcome our distinguished guest, Mr. Tony Costello. And welcome, Tony Costello.
Yay! There's confetti, Tony. There's confetti.
Okay, gotcha.
We are so happy to have you join us today. We are so excited to learn all about the stuff that you can teach us about, particularly with architecture in Indiana. But we'd really love to start knowing a little bit more about you. So can you give us a little more information on who you are and where you are and how you got here?
Sure. Well, I'm a transplanted New Yorker, born and raised in Corona, Queens, until fifth grade. And then we were part of the white flight out of those neighborhoods and moved up to Peekskill, New York, about 50 miles north on the Hudson River, but came back to the city for undergrad work at Pratt and then graduate work at Columbia. And while I was at Columbia, I started to get an interest because of the incredible professors I had to look at possibly a dual career as both teaching and practice. I would never not practice because I still believe strongly that if you're going to teach something, you better be practicing it. And I can say after 54 years that I think students agree with that. They know who is doing it. And as I like to say, when I'm talking to a student, hey, I'm struggling with the same issue. So, you know, don't think that all of us aren't involved. You'll be interested. I grew up in an Italian-American construction family. I had aunts and uncles who considered New Jersey to be a Western state. So I think you know people like that from New York. And so when I told them I was going out, because it was the newest school of architecture in the country, that I was going out to Indiana at this place called Ball State University, which was only 1 year old at the time. Wow. You know, I had aunts and uncles. Well, my favorite aunt said to me, "Oh my God, Anthony, you're going to kill your mother by not being able to come to dinner on Sunday after Mass."
I love it.
And now where's this Indiana? And I said, "Well, you go Pennsylvania, then you go Ohio, then you go Indiana." And they said, "Well, what's it like out there?" And I said, "Well, when you get about halfway across Ohio, you look down from the plain and all of a sudden you see this grid on the landscape. All these farm fields are, you know, gridded out. The cities are all on a grid." And I said, "I'll tell you how pervasive it is." I said, "They take a round pizza and cut it into squares." And my father went, "Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, Anthony, that's a sacrilege." I actually came out here. I was only 23 when I started teaching. So many of my students weren't too much younger than me. But it's been a great ride to be able to grow with Ball State College of Architecture and Planning. I feel has been a real honor. And to get to know the state of Indiana and its architecture has also been just wonderful for me. But yeah, I still love the city. I still love New York. I don't think you can grow up in New York and still. I'm an absolute avid Jets fan and Mets fan, and which is not too prevalent here in Indiana, obviously.
No, we won't hold it against you.
Listen, I'm going to be honest with you, Tony. I'm glad we're meeting. I am a Mets. I grew up a Mets fan.
Oh, my.
From Hammond,
Indiana.
Well,
I go back further. I think I go back further than you because I saw the Mets play their first 2 years in the Polo Grounds. So that's before they built Shea Stadium in 64. And I treasure that because of the history of Ebbets Field and, you know, the Polo Grounds. Those growing up in the 50s in New York as a kid who loved baseball, it couldn't be better. It was the golden era.
That's amazing.
The golden era for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, my dad's from Brooklyn, so you know,
okay.
We hear the stories, but I don't know. I think he was a Yankees fan. Don't say anything. But yeah.
Oh, I grew up in a Yankee household. Both my dad and my brother were Yankee fans.
And you survived to tell the tale. Okay.
As a Dodger fan, I still the scars are healing, but they're just about gone now.
Okay, this is good. That's when they called you Anthony by your full name.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I ever got a tattoo, it would be 55, the greatest year in Dodger baseball, you know.
I love it.
Awesome. Wonderful. All right. Well, I hate to take it away from New York.
That's okay.
But I'm going to direct it back to Indiana because, you know, that's why we're here. So what Janice and I really want to learn a lot more about is what on earth created like this ranking for Indiana to be sixth from the American Institute of Architects in the nation.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like we need to educate our listeners on, this architectural city.
Well, a pretty phenomenal city of Columbus, Indiana. I think probably about 50,000 people that really owes its growth and its sustained status among the international architectural community. Due to the foresight of J. Irwin Miller, who became the CEO of Cummins Engine Company, of course, the largest engine manufacturers in the world. I think they're in like 110 countries, make some of the finest diesel engines for trucks and generators. And, he was raised in obviously a privileged family. He went to Yale University. However, he did not overlap Eero Saarinen being there. That's a misconception you'll hear, is that, well, he met Eero Saarinen, and that's why he became interested in architecture. They missed by a year, but he was always interested in, and this is amazing for an industrialist, he always felt that in order to, grow a Fortune 500 company in Columbus, Indiana, he needed to create the best living environment for not only his workers, but the entire town or city. And so he started after World War II with building the best school buildings possible. He believed in education. He understood that good buildings promote education. And that's when he started the Cummins Foundation, which basically said, we will pay the architectural fees for the best architects in the United States to come here and to design our school buildings. And so that's what brought Harry Weiss. That's what brought a number of architects of national fame here. But very importantly, the other thing that I think instilled in J. Irwin Miller the love of good architecture is he worshipped at the first Christian church that was designed by Eliel Saarinen. That's Eero Saarinen's father, immigrant from Finland, who came and established the Cranbrook School of Art and Architecture up in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And so when it came time for a spinoff church, the North Christian Church, they hired the son. And Columbus is the only city in the United States to have major buildings by both Saarinens, by both Eliel and Eero Saarinen. And of course, Eero Saarinen goes on to become one of the great mid-century modernists. Most people are familiar with the St. Louis Arch, but also the Trans World Airline building at JFK, which thankfully has been adaptively reused for a major hotel that's there now, because it was threatened with demolition. And The other thing that's interesting about Eero Saarinen, of course, is he had also been commissioned to do the Concordia Lutheran Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And I had read about all this as a student at Pratt and Columbia. And, you know, to come out here to this place and be able to witness these firsthand was just really, really wonderful. Columbus has continued the program under the Cummins Foundation. So any not-for-profit organization, if you're building a civic building, so City Hall, the courthouse extension, all of those projects. Now, most recently, the foundation simply pays for the design architect fees, not the entire fee for the building, but we're still getting really today's major architects to come. And it's a real kudo. Back then, to be selected to do a building in Columbus was, I guess, arriving. I mean, as a young architect, when you got a project here, you really kind of had been acknowledged as one of the up-and-coming architects. So Hardy Holzman Pfeiffer was a young firm out of New York. They've done two buildings there, including Mount Healthy School. The school buildings were always at the forefront of the latest in thinking about educational facilities. And I've been privileged to teach several students who have come to Ball State's architecture program that grew up in Columbus and said, oh, yeah, you know, the slides at the Mount Healthy School were phenomenal. We loved going from one level to another on a slide, like, wow.
Wow.
You know, I mean, having gone to PS 16 and 19 in Corona, Queens, which, you know, had concrete playgrounds, it's like, what do you mean? What do you mean grass? Are you kidding?
Right. Just lead paint everywhere, you know, sharp, yeah. Oh, sharp and barbed exposed wire nails. Too, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to have safe. The barbed wire up on top. Right.
Don't want them getting out.
And I was very, very fortunate. I retired full time after 38 years in 2005. And then in 2013 through 15, I was asked to become the director of the Columbus, Indiana Architectural Archives, which really allowed me to kind of hands on get to see, you know, original drawings by Saarinen, original drawings by I.M. Pei. Again, I.M. Pei. People don't know, but I.M. Pei originally was a corporate architect for Zeckendorf, the big developer in San Francisco, spent 13 years, and I've heard him give wonderful lectures about it was being a corporate architect to taught him how to bring buildings in on budget, on time, which, by the way, a lot of clients love.
Yeah, surprise, especially when you're using tax dollars. Yeah.
And the Bartholomew County Library, which he designed right opposite Eliel Saarinen's church. Imagine a young architect being challenged like, oh, by the way, your site is right in front of the First Christian Church done by Eliel
right.
Saarinen.
Like your mentor, like, oh, your
no
icon.
Problem. No, sure. No problem. I always wanted a prominent site for one of my first buildings. But it's a wonderful building. Again, has stood the test of time. The working drawings are absolutely things of art. Each brick individually inked on Mylar, which, you know, today everything is computer. And you talk to students about ink on Mylar and they said, well, is that like right after, you know, chiseling drawings into stone? I mean,
they're like, what is this paper and pen you speak of? Right.
Exactly. Draw by hand. What?
What?
And by the way, that is a challenge for architectural education today. I love drawing so much. I have never done a computer drawing in my life. We still do all of our drawings manually in the office and love it. And by the way, the clients absolutely love them also. Yeah. In fact, the client we have right now for amazingly a mid 20th century house here in Muncie, is keeping every one of my drawings in a folio and, So, but anyway, Columbus is worth an incredible visit. There's a wonderful, wonderful hotel downtown, which has Eames chairs in the lounge and a wonderful little bar and a great little breakfast area. The beauty is most of the buildings are in walking distance in the downtown. So, but also the first thing you need to do is visit the visitor center. And they also have a shuttle bus with narration by local people who have gone through about 15-week course. I helped to teach that course, and it's a wonderful experience to go out to the schools, which are in the suburbs as well. So yeah, Columbus is definitely worth a visit.
I'm actually really embarrassed, Colleen. I mean, and Tony, I told you I did. I went to IU. I went to Bloomington for college. Don't laugh, Ball State. And I'll tell you what, I had great times at Ball State. I had several.
Right. Oh yeah.
I had several friends there. You guys know how to party. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, by the way, guess what? I am wearing a t-shirt for this occasion from Knicks in Bloomington.
Yes.
Great.
Also great times there. Also great times.
Okay. By the way, the art gallery on the Bloomington campus is from I.M. Pei. In fact, he got that project because of his library over in Columbus. And just being completed, this is amazing, but one of President McRobbie's, you know, they have formed a second state school of architecture, which is located here in Columbus, actually.
Okay.
And it's located in the old Republic newspaper building by SOM Chicago with Myron Goldsmith as architect. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the finest Mesian buildings in all of the United States and a wonderful school of architecture. But they are building another building on the Bloomington campus, according to drawings done by Mies van der Rohe for a building that was to be built back in the 60s and never got funded.
Done.
So that's really, yeah. So that's going to be another wonderful example to bring students to about, because they're following Mies's drawing. So it's going to be an exquisite piece of steel architecture.
Well, this is what I'm saying. You're blowing my mind right now, and I'm embarrassed as a fellow Hoosier that I am really far behind on this, because we're always like Chicago, New York, San Francisco, and in my home state, we are sitting on a mecca of amazing architecture and design, and I'm just hearing about it for the first time. So
it's just amazing.
Shame on me.
No. You know, it is interesting. When I came out here, and in 1980, one of my former student and colleagues, we established the Small Towns Assistance Program, where we take students to small towns, which unfortunately are kind of neglected by architects. You know, it's not a major market. And so I've been fortunate for the last 30 years to be in a number of small towns, and not that they have, what should I say, you know, internationally known architecture, but each small town has some incredible historic buildings. And you mentioned New Harmony, which again is really internationally significant because of it being, the original Harmonite Search for Utopia building right here in Indiana.
All right. So I really want to get to that. But before I got to back up and just do a couple questions that I'm dying to know about Columbus. Okay, hold on. So I'm putting an asterisk in my notes here on New Harmony because we have to get back
We're
to
coming
that.
Back. We're
circling back. Okay. So there are two things that that really struck me as you were telling us about Columbus, and two questions that I had. And the first question is, you know, at the beginning of J. Irwin Miller's, you know, sort of program to get all of this building and attract architects to Columbus, how did the people of Columbus respond to that? Were they immediately welcoming? Did they think it was weird? Like, I mean,
great,
I'm so intrigued.
Great question. Yeah. Great question. And it's a question that I often discuss with students for several reasons. Number one, obviously, if you're building school boards, you have something, or school buildings, you have something called a school board. And having served on one, I know that, you know, they're pretty powerful when it comes to what buildings are going to get built and what are not. There was a school board elected on an anti-architect ticket, by the way.
I'm not at all surprised.
Sounds like Indiana. I'm sorry.
That's why I asked.
You know,
That's why I asked the question.
Boy, does that sound... And they decided slides in an elementary school. Like, what? You know, I just parked my tractor out back for the meeting, and don't tell me about I'm going to fund a slide in an elementary school. Because Bartholomew County is basically an agricultural, you know, like many, as you know. Yes. And so they built, in all due respect, they got a Indianapolis, what we call a school firm. These are the firms that already have your school in a draw, because they're going to do them exactly alike. You know what they look like. And people said, oh my God, you know, no, I'm sorry. You know, can I switch my kid back over to, because it was a mundane school building with no sense of quality of space or light, or all the BS that architects really can talk about forever, as you know. It's interesting how it's kind of come full circle with people both defending those buildings and also at one time being very much against them.
Yeah. That's amazing. I love it.
Pitchfork. Don't change our schools. We won't want.
Well, and as you implied, it's like, you know, wait a minute, you know, give me the most building for the least amount of money.
With no care, like you said, to light, like best materials, you know, things are going to last in the future, flow of traffic. Yeah. You know, important things, not important things.
Important.
But it's so interesting how much we don't, you know, I mean, just in general, we don't know. I'm saying we, but I mean me, like in terms of like how important every little element is that goes into every single building that's built. Like people just don't have an appreciation for the level of detail and thought that goes into everything.
Yes. So. Yes. And great what I call great architecture, and that includes many, many, many buildings in Columbus, Indiana. They are great from the overall concept of the building, whether it's a courtyard scheme or a linear scheme, right down to the final detail. Like, you know, how does a window fit into a brick wall versus a wall that's framed in steel? And that is the last skill, by the way. We don't really even teach that in school. It's very difficult. It comes from experience, unless you've really done it. The other thing that's interesting is, coming from a construction family, I don't think I'd get a union card, but I can lay up a pretty good block wall. You know, I mean, I grew up. We built our own house, and when we moved out of the city. So I grew up, many of our first students to come to Ball State's new School of Architecture in the 60s were first generation, students, college students. So many of them came off the farm, by the way. So you didn't have to teach work ethic. I mean, these kids, the ones that came off a dairy farm, like, my God, 3 o'clock in the morning, of course, no problem. I'm getting up to milk the cows. So
this is nothing. Right.
I should have raised my kids on a farm.
Right.
But today's students are and as you know, this is national culturally. Right. Today's students, many of them come from dual professional homes. Both mom and dad are professional people. And let's just say that the work ethic has slipped just a little bit. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very diplomatic answer. Let's just be honest. That's just, we know.
We got it.
We got it.
We understand. All right. So that brings me to my second question. So you've got one architectural master across from another. Like, were these guys competing with each other? Was there some competition drama that we could talk about right now?
No, I think pay. And by the way, what's interesting is, and I love to talk to students about this. They actually destroyed our Carnegie Library to build Pei's Library. A lot of people don't know that.
Oh, wow! Oops.
but when I was the director of the architectural archives, I didn't get a lot of walk-in trade, so I had a lot of time on my hands. But there was a beautiful limestone Carnegie Library. It sat on the corner and had this circular kind of entry. I mean, a very, very beautifully designed building, which in those days, that was a pain. I mean, you took it down. No questions asked, because we're going to get a new building. I don't think Pei could have done that dish nowadays if he got that commission. But what Pei did in respect to the Eliel Saarinen building across the street is he set his building back so that he created a plaza, which is, you know, very European in a way. And the reason he did that, again, this is a great learning thing for my students, is most downtowns are centered around the courthouse square. You all know those great mm-hmm. historic buildings in the middle of the city. Mm-hmm. And most of them grew out in all four directions. Because of the floodplain, Columbus grew out only into the northeast quadrant because you couldn't go into the floodplains. So the Columbus courthouse actually is on a corner. It's not set in the middle of the block. And when Pei came and looked at Columbus, he said, you know, Columbus does not really have a public gathering space like all great cities do. And, you know, up in Chicago, there's the plaza in front of the, you know, is it the U.S., is it the city building or the government building?
Daily Plaza.
You know, open space, as you know, Chicago is an incredible example with the river, with the lake development of open space, how important it is. Of course, New York City, what would it be without Central Park? But anyway, that's why he created the plaza. And then, of course, J. Irwin Miller understood the importance and commissioned Alexander Calder to do the large arch, which obviously is an amazing piece of architecture. By the way, I only learned by working in the archives, it's one of actually five castings of that sculpture. So I don't tell the people in Columbus because they think they got the only one. So fair.
Let them have Tony. Let them have something.
What I tell them is you got the first casting. The other people got the other four. There you go.
Everybody wants the signed original. Okay.
That's right.
I mean, everybody. That's amazing. All right. So I love that. I love that these architects were actually respectful of each other and
very respectful.
I think that's absolutely what we need more of.
That's
in the
so
world.
Hoosier too.
I love it. That's just amazing. How fun. How great.
Yep.
All right. So we've got to circle back to New Harmony because I was studying this last night and I was fascinated because I, again, had no idea. I'm looking it up on the map. I'm looking at all the images. Just my husband was looking with me last night and he's like, we gotta go downstate.
Yep.
He said, yeah, we really do. Because it's so beautiful. So tell us a little bit about New Harmony, what the town's about and how it became so significant.
Well, again, you know, in the latter half of the 19th century, of course, that's when obviously there were major immigration, you know, to the United States. Obviously, the Germans came in the 1850s and 60s, and that's why in Indiana, my dear wife Carmen is Lutheran, so we're a mixed faith family, and it was interesting to find out that there were Lutheran farming communities and Catholic farming communities. The Catholic farming communities were typical Southern Germans who came, Bavaria, and then the Lutherans were more the Northern Germans related more to Scandinavia, and they established Lutheran farming communities. In fact, my wife's mother grew up in a little town near Seymour, Indiana, again, this incredible kind of ethnic infusion. Well, the Harmonites were again a sect, much like the Amish and Mennonites. They came out of Germany with a whole kind of different notion of what is the simple life and what is the life that you should be leading as a quote Christian unquote. And they founded this community. It was to be a utopian community, and that failed, but then a gentleman named Owen came along with what was called the Owenites. So this was another, I want to be real careful about talking about mega churches, but what's interesting is, you know, there were these men who really had a following. I mean, these were men who were able to get people to literally follow them to the rural part of Indiana. Now that's pretty powerful.
Yeah,
right.
So Robert Owen, Robert Owen then succeeded the Harmonites with the Owenites. So there were really two movements in this same little town. And the Owen family, by the way, continued to become like the J. Owen Miller family. They continued to fund public improvements. And actually, I'm not sure if they were influenced. I know Jane Owen was, I think, fifth generation, but they hired Philip Johnson to do the roof. Church there. It's an outdoor pavilion, and many weddings are held there. It's a beautiful organic with shingles, and then Richard Meyer did the Anthoneum, which again is based on this idea of a community that is not only steeped in faith, but is steeped in knowledge. And so it's this beautiful white, pristine building. And so you get this juxtaposition of these two very different, if you will, pieces of architecture juxtaposed to this 1880, you know, downtown, beautiful Victorian kind of commercial downtown.
And then, am I understanding this correctly? That New Harmony was was it the first place that did like a public library and
yes,
public
yes, education? Thank you. That's what I mentioned about what's interesting is both the Harmonites and followed with the Owenites, they were very much into not only faith, but into kind of intellectual growth as well, which is an interesting, you know, if you think of it, it's an interesting combination. And that's why they came to the United States, because that was not exactly universally accepted in Europe at the time.
I don't know if it's universally accepted in the States right now.
Bravo. Bravo. Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But no, as I said, that is beautiful. And you know, again, it's small town Indiana. The people are incredibly friendly, and they understand that tourism, you know, it's not that, oh, those darn tourists, because when you rent a room at the inn, that's fine. You know, as you know, small towns struggle to have any sort of economic base these days.
Yeah. Well, this has just been such a delight. I'm fascinating and fabulous information. And I hope everybody is like setting their calendars and getting ready to explore some new things around the state of Indiana.
We need to have the county tourism office next. Like I think we just did the best commercial for them. Like,
You know, you'll always find people from Japan and Europe who come, you know, to there, because it does have international significance in terms of the modernist movement.
I love it. I love it. That's so great. All right. Well, Janice, is there anything else?
Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah. I'm serious. I'll be in Richmond, Indiana. I'm going to go and then go down to Kentucky to visit in-laws on the way back, right up 65.
Okay.
Like you said, I'm definitely
That's
making
That's great.
A stop.
That is, no, well worth the visit.
Thank you. No, I'm hooked. I can't wait.
Tony, I cannot thank you enough for joining us today.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. Now, my pleasure on this end.
We've learned so much and we really appreciate your time. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, you're extremely welcome. Safe travels. And let me know again if I can ever, because I love humor, as you can probably tell. I've always held comedians, and my father always said the world needs more laughter. And I always held on to that as a pretty important thing.
Well, we agree. Thank you.
It's a thankless job sometimes. We appreciate it.
Well, you know what? If a person doesn't understand good humor, then you don't even waste time, right?
Right.
Amen.
Defending Indiana, featuring Colleen Brennan and Janice Rodriguez, is produced by Colleen Brennan and Janice Rodriguez. Theme music and sound editing by Michael Miltenberger. Our season 2 intern is Kate Beck. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard today, you can subscribe to Defending Indiana wherever you find your favorite podcasts.